Welcome to Christ Today. A part of life is to determine what is truth and what is what we imagine, our imaginings. And we get to figure out the reality of life and the imaginings. And there's a series of things that we deal with in life and figure it out and then live appropriately. It takes a while to have these life lessons, and God help us to learn them. Well, a person arrives and understands parts of life for better or for worse, but we all have a chance to seek understanding and then to act on the understanding that we know. Every one of us has the opportunity to change and to understand more, including the opportunity to know Jesus Christ. And we have this until we die. And then there is judgment. That's from Hebrews 9:27. We have the things in life where we learn by examples. One example I like is the thief on the cross next to Jesus. And there he was with only moments to decide, and he decided that Jesus was the Christ. And Jesus said, "On this day you will be with me in paradise." What a wonderful hope we all have in Jesus Christ. And we go through life, and we have experiences over and over, time and time again. We can decide one thing or another until the end of life. And meanwhile, there are pleasures and there are pressures, both. We have in our personal life and our business life, and it seems so many things are in a hurry. We are in a rush and we have pressures. As we go through the experiences of our personal life or our work life, and it just brings us to the understanding of God, Jesus. We acknowledge the life experience that we have, and we seek to obey our Lord Jesus Christ. It seems like the obedience is the key element of what we do and what we understand. We seek to obey God, and to obey God, it certainly helps to know what he tells us, and that is so wonderful to know the truth of the Bible. As we study it, it unfolds in the reality and the meanings that it is communicating. It's wonderful. We have so much life experience, and a part of what we do is we figure out what is in life and what is in, us. What does our ego tell us? Are we doing something because we're so good and important? Well, a lot of people do. But pretty soon we learn that the really true, good, and important person is Jesus, the King of Kings. And we want acknowledgement and we want honors, but they come in different ways. Sometimes it has nothing to do with what is on earth, and sometimes it does. When you look at the kings and the princes who get honors and prizes, or the soldiers who get ribbons and awards. And so, yes, even today, we have this system going on where even the children get participation awards. And so we all want to be acknowledged and want something about our importance to be acknowledged about what we do. And, oh, wow, yeah. But a part of life is to go through the experience where we have acknowledgement and we also realize what our true position in life is. And when you consider what it is compared to God and his Bible, that gives us a reality check. Now, there are lots of things that we deal with in life, the intentions of people that are good and, well, kind of tricky. Yeah, there are things that not everybody is true and honest, and we get to learn those lessons in life. We always learn things. We always learn about things changing. And, oh, I think a good example of that is how things develop in life. And that includes the technology around us and what we learn in business and relations and in structure. It's just life. That's how life goes. We start out with one thing and we develop it. Just like at one time in ancient history, there was a sling like David used on Goliath. And that developed into something else, like the trebuchet, which threw rocks into cities or against the walls. And after that, there was the cannon. And after that, there were the firearms. And the firearms turned into machine guns. And then we get new things beyond that, like lasers, laser beams, or like flashlights. And we all get a development in what we are dealing with. And one day after the lasers, perhaps there will be the phasers they're on TV, but we don't have them yet. Yeah. But we have the things that develop, and it is amazing to see what we can develop when mankind put their mind to it. We even have great big developments in life-saving techniques and technology in medicine or even injectable medicines. And all these things can be used for the goodness and advancements of humanity, and they can be used to harm humanity, both. So are these weapons of war like slings and trebuchets and cannons and firearms, are they advancing the kingdom of God or the kingdom of man? And what about vaccines? Are they advancing for the betterment of mankind or the detriment of mankind? Well, we have science, and we have to ponder the advances. Are they going to be for our benefit or our harm? And what about the emergencies that are going on? The emergencies, I just makes me think of war. We have war in Europe. It's all developing in the Middle East, and the European countries, many of them, most of them, are developing a draft. A universal conscription where they will have the people sign up for the military service, both men and women. And we will all be forced into compliance with the draft. If you want a government-issued license in many of those countries, whether you're a hair cutter, a nurse, or a doctor, or just a bus driver, or what about each one of us with our driver's license? If we want to renew our license in many of those European countries, we have to sign up for that universal conscription, which is the draft into the military. It's something that is going on right now, yeah, all over Europe, and we have to wonder, well, if they're thinking like this, maybe there's going to be a war pretty soon. USA is having they're having a conscription for the men to sign up for drafts also. And it's something that the certain legislatures, they are expecting that it will become universal, but right now it is only that the men have to sign up. We will see what we see, but it's something that we can certainly be aware of and know that it is something that is happening right now on many levels, on many different people, in the world, especially Europeans, oh, but also America now. So we have to figure this out. And are we going to support a war effort, or do we even have a choice? Often, people think that they can get around the certain requirements, just like they think we can get around whatever the requirements are, whether it's for a loan or for something. And we think that we can find a way around it, even to cheat or to find a legal loophole. Well, these things are all possible, and we have to know that whatever we choose to do, there will be consequences for it. It's not like we quite know, but we kind of know the direction, and we can figure out where it will end up. These are the principles that are going on right now in quite a few countries. The countries think that they are in charge, just like in the Middle Ages, the kings thought that they were in charge. And they are in charge until they're not. And that's one of the things that we have to recognize. We are dealing with authorities, whether it's the king or the country or the bankers or anything else. Speaking of bankers, I'm thinking of the 1820s when there was a system of money going on where the government needed money from the big bankers, and so they had to comply with the wishes of the bankers. Right around 1776 in the United States, America printed its own money, and they were called the Continental Dollar. And the Continental Dollar was traded in an amount equivalent to a dollar until they printed so many of the Continental Dollars that the value of the Continental Dollar was worth only 50 cents. And then it dropped to 25 cents. And at about that price, 20 cents or so, the big British bankers bought most of the Continental Dollars that they could possibly buy. And then in the 1820s, the American government needed to borrow money. They needed money, so they went to the big bankers to see if they could get a loan. And the big British bankers said, okay, we'll give you a loan, but you have to pay us for the Continental Dollars that we have bought, and you have to pay us the full value of the dollars. And so they bought them for about 25 cents a dollar, and they got a dollar back for them as they exercised their loan option to the United States government. And that's an example of what bankers do with money. It's very well understood in the banking industry that that's what bankers do. They understand loaning money, or when somebody or some country has to borrow money, that's what they do. Now, the United States used that money to expand, or should I say improve, the United States, so it had facilities to help with the westward expansion at and after the Civil War. Should I say up until between 1820 and 1868, let's say. And so the U.S. government needed money, and they made agreements to borrow money, and they did. So it's an example of what happens with banking and how we are at the mercy of the bankers when we ask for a loan. And there are lots of examples of this. We know that that's true when we get a money loan from a banker. And I'm thinking back another time, oh, was it about 30 years ago? Egypt needed to borrow money because they were constructing a dam in Egypt. And then they ran into problems and they could not make the loan payments. So the banks took over the infrastructure, in particular, the water system that served the people of Egypt. And something like this happened where the bankers tripled the water rates so that they could get their money back. And so the bankers always have a way to get their money back. And that is going on right now, too. It's going to happen in every country that has a loan from the bankers, including the USA. We're at $30-plus trillion, and we are going to have to pay that money back. And the bankers have all the power and leverage to make the U.S. citizen and the U.S. country do whatever they want. That's a long-established practice. We know it will happen. And we know that it will not be an easy thing to do. And it won't be easy to get out of that trouble either. That is just typical of how governments work and how bankers work and how the people who have to pay the loan, how we all work. We are going to have to pay, and the bankers are not going to be swindled, I'll use that word, out of their money. They will require payment, and the banks and the courts will agree to the repayment of the loans. That has been something that has been well established over time. Time and history, the bankers always get their money back. And they have had this practice going on for hundreds of years. They have laws to make sure that they get their money back. So when the central banks of different countries borrow money, the bankers know that they are going to get their money back, whether it's a loan that was made to the Bank of England or Bank of Ireland or Bank of China or the Federal Reserve. It has an established legal history where the bankers know that the money will be paid back. It's just not exactly certain how, but all the mechanisms are there to legally force the government and the people to pay the money back. And so if we look a little deeper at the central banks, like the Federal Reserve or other central banks in the world, we know that there is a corporate law that has been established for hundreds of years. It's not just corporate law, but it's national law, banking law, international law, World Bank law, the Bank for International Settlements, and even that old, ancient maritime law that was established in the courts of England. Maritime law is really the most basic law that that the bankers rely on. And that is something that is well understood, but somehow we the people don't seem to be aware of it. And if we are, we kind of go past it because we think everything will be okay. Well, I guess it will be okay until it isn't. And that's the thing. So we have a chance to learn about all these things and to be caught in the web of banking. I guess the only law that's older than maritime law is biblical law. And the biblical law is pretty clear too. It tells us of what we can do and not do, including we're not to steal, we're not to cheat, and we're not to borrow. Not to borrow, yes. So how are we doing it, that one? The whole world seems to be borrowing money. for our house or to borrow money from our house or to borrow by obtaining credit cards. And that's kind of what the countries are doing too. They are borrowing and telling the international bankers that they will be paid back for the money they're loaning. And who guarantees the loan? We the people guarantee the loan. It's going to be a kind of difficulty when it comes down to that. And I do think of the many times in the Bible, especially Deuteronomy 15:6, where it says, "You shall not borrow." We can loan, but not borrow. So, sure, the Old Testament talks about money. The New Testament talks about money. And somehow, we get to learn how we can be obedient to what the Bible tells us to do. And still, people all over the world continue doing what they have known to do. Borrow money. Spend the money on their house, on their credit cards, everything. And now we have so much household debt in the USA and in the world. Oh, the credit card debt in the USA, I just read this, was about $7,000 per household there. So the thing is credit card debt has interest that we pay on it. And it's just showing that there is a great deal of debt that continues to grow all over the world. Yes, in USA, but everywhere. And the people who want what they want, they're getting in more and more debt. So just like the World Economic Forum suggests, or they have advertised this, you will own nothing and be happy. So we don't know the future, but we know history. And we know that there is a pattern that continues, and that pattern is in part debt, and then collapse, and then poverty. That is the system that has gone on for not just hundreds of years, but thousands of years. We can look back to Rome or Babylon or any of the ancient cultures, and we see that people and countries have borrowed money, and then they collapse, and then the people are in poverty. So if you don't like that pattern, you have something you can do right now. Get out of debt. Don't borrow anything. Don't borrow anything at all. The pattern is unmistakable, and yet we know it enough to say, I don't want to take debt on, but very few people have really listened and learned that lesson that we don't want any debt. Nobody can learn this lesson but each one of us. We all have to learn, and we all have to do it. And so many people only want what they want. And so what do? They put on their happy face and say, don't worry, be happy. But it's not happy when we get caught in that debt trap. It's a big surprise when it finally comes along, just like in life. We get surprises, and life is all good until we get a serious surprise, and we know better than to do those silly things that we so often do. But who wants to follow the Bible and obey it? There's a few people who do, but it doesn't mean it's easy, because we have to deny ourselves and have some self-discipline. And most of us don't have that self-discipline to deny the pressures that we have and the pleasures that we want and the imaginings that we have. So it gets a little bit complicated when we weigh our wants against what it is we could have if we could just get a loan. A loan with a credit card, a loan on our house, and somehow we get caught in this trap of getting more and more debt. Are we going to ever learn? Are we going to ever live according to biblical wisdom? I wish I knew. We have life that we want to make simple. And in a way, the Bible makes it simple. But who will obey the biblical principles? At one point, we're going to have to. Either we'll be forced into it, or we will do it because we know it's what is right and good. We all want to have a simple and easy life, but are we going to obey Jesus? Are we going to have our concerns, or are we going to live with fear around us of the debt collector, of whatever it is, of losing our house or our children, or going without the things that we have learned to want? Well, it's not like it's going to be easy, but it's something that is a fact of life. Are we going to do it or not? Well, we know we have concerns, and sometimes those concerns turn into fears. And, you know, we're told not to fear, but it's one thing to say, don't be fearful, and it's another thing to do it. I think of 1 Timothy 1:7. It says, to not have fear, but rather have a sound love and a sound mind. Well, it's easy to do, is it? Or is it just easy to say? Well, somehow we have to say it, believe it, and do it. There are many parts in the Bible that talk about doing what we are supposed to do. And I'm thinking of Joshua 1:9. It says similarly, to be strong and courageous, and do not be discouraged, for the Lord is our God, and you ought to take our Lord with you everywhere you go. Philippians 4:19, God will liberally and fully supply your every need. Are we relying on God, or are we relying on the loan that we can take out to get the things we want? Well, eventually we get a little more wisdom and experience in life, and I hope it's not too late, because if it's too late, you have already entered into agreements where you owe a whole lot of money, and it makes it very difficult when you have a lot to repay. Well, we all want to rest in the love of Jesus Christ, but that means we also have to be obedient to Jesus Christ. It's a long lesson that we learn, and we learn it over and over again. So are we ready to obey now and do what the Bible tells us to do? Sometimes it is simple, and sometimes it is complicated. And sometimes it is contrary to what we have experienced in life, whether it's an earthly experience or a spiritual experience or a legal experience or a medical experience. We're just not quite sure, but we can be sure when we read the Bible about what is in store. So who's willing to do it? Who's willing to obey what the Bible says, knowing that there are specific laws that tell you how to live? And if you don't, you know there will be consequences. I'm just thinking of Ephesians 5:16, and it says that we should take care because the days are evil. Are the days evil? Do you see the days as evil, or are the days good? Well, it's a little both, isn't it? So you have both of them working on you to either bring you evil or good. And so which are we going to choose to live by? The forces of our God, good, or the forces of the world, which are, well, they're worldly. And that means that they will get their way with you if you live within them. So Jesus is our example. And still, when you look at the different things that happen to Jesus, well, we get to learn from them. And we get to learn, for instance, how to be safe in the world and avoid trouble. Sometime I think of Jesus in the temple. When he was a boy, his parents, Mary and Joseph, found out that, hey, where's Jesus? And they didn't know. They thought he would be with a group. You see, in those days, safety was in numbers. And so the people came from one town to the next in a group, just like they would go shopping in a group. And the group would be a lot of people for the protection of the group. So Mary and Joseph were with a group, and they thought their family would be just fine, but Jesus stayed at the temple. And, of course, he was about his father's business. So it's understandable, but it's not what we expect. And being a part of a group is a part of what we can wonder if we're going to do. And that probably is true. We probably are going to be a part of a group. It might be a Christian group. It might be a group who has a common interest. But somehow, when there's a lot of people together, you are a group and you are protected against the bandits, just like in the days of Jesus. That's why they traveled places in groups, so each could protect the other. And so we understand this in a way today, and one day we might have to be in a group just to go shopping or go to an appointment. So it's something which we have to be aware of. We have had a wonderful blessing in living in America, where there is safety and there is a system of protection, including the police protection. But look at the way gangs are growing. And you know that it could change for America. And therefore, know that we might have to go back to a system where we go to the store or go visiting with a group of people. And I don't mean 5 people, 15 people, maybe 25 or 50 people. That's the kind of thing that we know could happen. Will it or will it not? Or do we protect ourselves? How do we protect ourselves? Well, let's see. In Luke 22:38, it talks about Jesus asking his disciples, "How many swords do you have?" And the disciples say, "We have 2 swords." And he says, "That is enough." And in those olden days, people did have to defend themselves with sticks or staves, barrel staves, or swords. But swords were kind of a military weapon. They were expensive. They were hard to get. And yet, the Luke there tells you that Jesus said, "Sell your coat and buy a sword." For that day, it was the sword was a military weapon. It was a weapon of war. And yet Jesus said, "Go get one. Go get one." And 2 was enough for that group. So it's something that we get to ponder and understand what it means for us today in the question of defense. Shall we have a sword? Now, in that day, a sword was a weapon of war. Just like today, guns are weapons of war. Should we own a gun? Well, I guess that's an individual question. And swords were expensive, and now guns are a little bit expensive too. So it's a matter of we get to search out the understanding with prayer and figure it out. But America's founding fathers certainly did acknowledge the Bible and the Bible history and the secular history. And they could tell that some things were good and necessary to protect the Christian population. And our forefathers did talk about having a free population, free and so they could own weapons also. That's why we have the Second Amendment, so that we could protect ourselves from other people. Oh, but also from the tyrannical government, from a government that tells you exactly what to do. And Thomas Jefferson said, well, let's see, he said, it was a right and a duty of the people to overthrow a repressive government or a repressive tyrant. So here we are, sitting and enjoying our comfortable life. What if we ever had to overthrow a tyrannical government? Now, this has happened many times in the world in the last 100 years. Many times a government has been overthrown by the people. But more often, the government was taken over by a group of armed people or military people or a guerrilla movement even. So arms do have a place in society, and we get to try to figure out what that is for each one of us. Would we even use one if we had one? I don't know. That's a really big question. But we have these things going on today where we have the potential of gaining freedom or losing freedom. And it's something which we each have to seek an understanding about. As the population of America searches for an answer, will we choose to have a weapon of our choosing? Well, like I said, it's individual, and we get to figure it out how we are going to protect our choices and protect our freedoms, or protect our population from a tyrannical government. I don't know, Thomas Jefferson had a few things to say about that. And so he wrote about it in several different ways. And he talked about having boldness and enterprise and independence. Oh, yeah, that's right. And that would, having a gun with you, I think he was talking about a rifle. Yeah, he was. Taking a rifle with you on a walk, and that way it would encourage boldness and enterprise and independence of the mind. So our founding fathers certainly had some ideas, and I wonder if we will have to relearn these lessons today. Well, I guess it's being decided in these very days about what's going to happen in our future, and we get to participate in that decision. And I hope you do participate in that decision, because otherwise somebody will make you do what they want you to do. That reminds me of a joke. Oh, I heard this years ago. How do you tell an armed slave what to do? And the answer to that little riddle is you don't. There's no such thing as an armed slave. Well, anyway, that was a joke that I heard years ago. Oh, well, so what has changed in our country? What has changed from what our forefathers knew and told us what to do and how to live? Yeah, it's a question. And certainly we get to figure out what it all means and how we are going to live according to our understanding and the freedoms that have been won for us by our founding fathers, who realized that if they wanted freedom, they had to fight for freedom from the King of England. And, oh yes, the early colonists wanted to comply with the King of England, but they found out that they could not comply because the king kept increasing the demands upon the people. And if you look at government today, you can see that it's kind of a parallel today when the government keeps requiring more and more things. Just think back to 100 years ago. You didn't need a building permit. You didn't need a permit to change your water heater. You didn't need a permit to go walking on a hike in a wilderness area. You didn't need a permit to hunt animals for your supper. Whatever, there's just a lot of things that have changed in America. And now we get to figure out, are we going to go back to the pattern of being a subject like we used to be in the olden days of the colonies? We used to be a subject of the King of England. And the King of England made the laws and told us what to do. And if we didn't, he would punish us. He would either punish America or the individual people, or he would send troops to make sure that the Americans would do what they were told. And a part of what we were told to do was to let the troops of England live in our houses. And that was a part of the things that was objected to. Well, you look at those Bill of Rights in our the constitutional areas, and you see a lot has changed. I think one of the things that I think is just amazing that has changed is that our money, the Constitution says that our money will only be gold and silver because the early people of America knew that paper money would inflate and inflate and inflate, and it would inflate more than you could use it. So they said all money had to be silver or gold. In the original words, they said only specie shall be used, and the specie meant gold or silver or a basic element of a metal. So things have changed in our country, and we get to figure out, are we going to let them continue to change, or are we going to seek the freedom that we used to have? It's a good question, and a part of that is, are we going to be healthy enough to have our freedom? Now, there's so many people who are on prescription medications that they believe is necessary for their life to continue. Oh, well, it's not just believe it necessary. A lot of people are requiring the medicines to stay alive. So what are we going to do about that? You might have to find an alternative. I don't know. And I think the natural cures are a possibility, but they might not work as well as a pharmaceutical. Still, it is something that we each get to figure out what to do and how to do it. Well, we just want to take care of our health and our bodies, and a part of that is getting the exercise. Yeah, sorry, I was just thinking of a Thomas Jefferson who said, when you exercise, take a gun. No, that was funny to me. Because it contributed to boldness and independence. Anyway, somehow we have to figure out where our country is going and what we're going to do about it. Are we going to support the country? Are we going to support the Christian missionaries going around the world? Well, sometime we have to pay for things too. If you want to pay for the advancement of God's kingdom through missionaries, somebody is going to have to pay. And that probably means you're going to have to pay, just like we paid for helping the people who get through natural disasters, through tornadoes, floods, fires, earthquakes, all of it. And the Bible tells us that these things are going to continue, maybe in specifically and maybe in general. So what are we going to do when we have troubles? I think what we're going to do is have a storehouse of things that will sustain us, will help us to live through the trouble, and will help the people around us to live through the trouble, so that we can speak the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. That's Mark 16:15. It's wonderful what we do, but we have to actually do it. Now, maybe you're not feeling equipped to talk about it, and maybe you need to read the Bible a few more times to get equipped, and maybe you need to pay money to the church in your neighborhood church, or maybe you need to pay directly to the missionaries. Somehow, how are we going to be obedient to the Bible to preach the good news of the gospel to every creature? How are we going to do that? Yes, we do it when we can, and we also help people who do it. They're missionaries. God bless the missionaries. Well, we have things going on all over the country, and we learn how things advance. I was just thinking about the advancements of war implements. Again, I know I just said this a few minutes ago. From the sling, throwing a rock, to the trebuchet, throwing a big rock, to a cannon, and to a firearm, and automatic weapons, and atomic weapons, and chemical and biologicals. Yes, things just keep advancing. Oh, and now we have robots and self-driving cars. And somehow, you don't want to forget about the truth of the gospel and how you can obey God. After all, we're all going to spend eternity with God, right? Right? In heaven? Well, then follow what the Bible tells you to do. What does the Bible tell you to do? I think that's a part of what we all do, is we read the Bible with our own eyes and figure out what it tells us to do, how to obey the Word of God, how to actually be born again. It's all a part of what we're supposed to do, and tell people what to do about the good news of the gospel. And sure, we have troubles in the all around us. There are troubles everywhere. There are troubles with the school system, with the laws, with insurance companies, with what the government does. Or was the 9/11 a problem, or was it? Did you ever read the 9/11 Commission report? Well, I did, and there were a lot of people who disagreed with it, and some of them were the architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth. And then another group developed airline pilots for 9/11 Truth. So we have things that are going on that are a conflict with what we understand has happened and what the authorities tells us has happened. So I know one book I liked about 9/11 was called Methodical Illusion by Rebecca Roth. She was a stewardess at the time of 9/11, and she talked in her book about the procedures and about why the events of 9/11 should not have happened. And it makes a very eye-opening report. So if you are interested, sure, read A Methodical Illusion by Rebecca Roth. It's eye-opening. So here we are trying to do what is, well, God's truth. And that's what we want to remember. And it helps to know what God's truth is. And that means we read the good news of the gospel. It happens as we go through life that we want to be faithful. And sure, you could say 9/11 is an event that was that truthful or was that deception? And just like all the things that are going on around us, are we going to support truth or live in deception? It's a question, and we all get to figure out what's going on with the bureaucracy for one, with the natural disasters for another, with the agencies that we think are going to help us, whatever it is, the Department of Homeland Security or Health and Human Services or our churches. There are a lot of things that we have to figure out what is actually going to help us and what is actually going to hinder the preaching of the gospel. Well, let's try to get our interests and our priorities lined up so that we can be faithful to God, Jesus Christ. And it is a matter of understanding the hope that we have in Jesus Christ and what is going on around us and how we tell the good news of the gospel to so many people in the midst of a world that is full of wrongness. It's full of sin. It's full of dishonesty. And so what we need to do here is figure out how to do it as we preach the good news of the gospel and the born-again experience and talk about it. We know there's plenty of problems, and the Bible tells us about all the things that are will bring us to a place in hell, which is a lake of fire with brimstone and sulfur in it. So we get to read about these things. Sure, I think of Revelation chapter 21, verse 8 about that. And I think whatever it is, we want to be sure that we are not going to be among those that would go to that lake of fire. And that means we are going to be obedient to God in the ways that we read out of the Bible. It's pretty clear, but who will do it? Are you going to read it? Yeah, you should. It's not hard to read. It's not that many pages compared to a book that so many people have read, whatever the book is. Read the Bible. Listen to it on tape. Talk about it with your pastor and the people in church. Go to a church that actually reads the Bible and knows the good news of the gospel of Mark 16:15. We all have a message that we can tell people about. Sometimes it is appropriate to talk about burning in hell, and sometimes it is important to talk about the blessings and ask God when you are speaking to people what the most appropriate way is for you to show love to your neighbor. You know, love your neighbor as you love yourself. In Matthew 22:37. There you go. We learn a little bit here and a little bit there. And so we read the Bible and hold it in our heart and our mind so that we are able to preach the good news of the gospel. And a part of that is preparedness. That's what I see. A part of our preparedness is to keep people alive so they can both hear and tell others about the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. So we have reasons. Some people want to have a certain pleasure for themselves. But really, when you look at what is in God's kingdom, he wants his good news to be told, and he tells each one of us to tell others about the good news of the gospel. It's pretty simple. And our supplies also can be pretty simple. What would we want to do? What would we want to have on hand to show love and compassion to people who are going through a hard time? Now, the world has been full of hard times for thousands of years, and we may well have another hard time. It's something which we each get to figure out, but we don't want to go hungry. And that means we will want to help other people with not going hungry. Sure, I think of the basic needs of water, food, and warmth. And what kind of wood? What kind of food? The basics. I think of the basics, like wheat and rice and sugar and oil to cook with. It's just a matter of we all have to figure this out and do what we understand. And ask God to help us to understand so that we can do what is the best for ourselves and our family and our neighbors. Well, it's a good idea to seek what is a discernment for you and the pattern that will be the most beneficial for you and the people you love, even the people you don't especially love, because wouldn't it be great to have a world full of love where people cared about each other? We have to have our own supplies because we never know if other people will be able to help other people. Will FEMA or the Red Cross or the churches be able to help the people around us? Oh, perhaps. But we are the ones who are right there. So let us try to help one another by thinking about having some extra supplies on hand, food and supplies. As we speak the good news of the gospel. Now, always, you can listen to the broadcasts of Christ Today. There's plenty of them, and they're all a little bit different. So go to the website of www.christtoday.org and look at any one that suits you. There are quite a few, and some of them are interesting, and some of them are, well, they're okay. So God bless you. I'm certainly glad that you seek God every day. As we live in these wonderful days, God bless you.